Okay, welcome back. Hour number two and hour number three, because they're going to be connected tonight as we have two of our finest Americans in the field of trying to understand what's really being done to us. Great Americans who are writers, researchers, and who have spent much of their lives trying to pull the veil off of all of us. They are, of course, Jordan Maxwell, if you've seen the guest section at Rents.com, and Jay Widener, our friend and colleague and filmmaker. Jordan, of course, over 50 years in the field of trying to help everyone understand what's being done to them. Jay produces wonderful documentaries. A new one on Stanley Kubrick is due shortly. We look forward to that as well. First, Jordan Maxwell, are you there? And I hope you had a reasonable weekend. Was it all right?
It was fairly quiet. I was happy about that. Anytime things are quiet, that's always a big plus in my life.
I agree. It was nice to have a lighter than usual news load at this end, believe me.
Yeah. Man.
Jay, how about your weekend?
Well, you know, it was nice. I'm happy. I think that the world seems to have avoided several cataclysms, at least for the time being, and we can all kick back and enjoy this time and get ready for, I'm sure, which is going to be a very nasty 2011. Yeah. So
they're going to double down on us, is what they're going to do.
They are,
and probably. All right, Jordan, what would you like to talk about tonight? We have a wide range of topics, but the maestro will lead us off here.
Well, I'm not sure. I think the work that Jay has been doing, I have always been interested in, the hidden symbolism. I've not really gotten very much into the alchemical connection to the world, but I understand it's important. Jay is much better at that than I am, but
we both are
seeing the same thing.
Right. Well, I think we're all three of us, and most of the people listening, at least have a reasonable handle on it too. It's thanks to you and Jay. It's something that is now at least reachable, where in the past it wouldn't have been. All right, Jay. What about the alchemical angle to all of this? So you can go back to your work, of course, on the Cross of Henday and other things. But where does alchemistry and alchemy figure into this thing we're stuck with?
Well, it's the million-dollar question I've been pondering now and really starting to zero in on, in fact. And my basic conclusion after all this many years of study is a little bit shocking, and that is that I think actually that Newton and Einstein were both dreadfully mistaken and have actually put science on a disaster course. And what I mean by that is that the physicists will tell you that there's four kinds of energy. There's your weak and strong nuclear force, there's your electromagnetic force, and then there's gravity. And they will admit to you that gravity is the weakest of these four forces. But then Newton and Einstein and a lot of others have built an entire universe based on gravity, the weakest of the four forces.
Mm-hmm.
And when this became inculcated into our educational system, understanding alchemy at that point became impossible for most people, because alchemy is basically postulating, and I believe correctly, that we live in an electrical universe, and that the force that holds you to the ground is not gravity, but electromagnetic force. And if we look at the work of James Clerk Maxwell, we can see in his poetry and his fanciful writings that he was approaching this same thing. He, of course, discovered electromagnetism, and we can see that he's approaching this whole idea also of actually regulating gravity to the netherworld. It doesn't exist even. And ironically, the guy that destroyed most of Maxwell's writings on electromagnetism as opposed to gravity, his name was Heaviside, if you can believe that. And Dr. Heaviside said that Maxwell was James Clerk Maxwell was a mystic, a possible mystic,
uh-huh.
and they had to remove some of his more fanciful writings about dimensions out of the curriculum that he had created. And so even to this day, unless you've read more of his esoteric works, you realize that, you know, Maxwell was also stopped from this. And I can't believe it's accident, because the military has been establishing what they call anti-gravity weapons, but they aren't really anti-gravity weapons. They're very, very superior electromagnetic weapons. And so this is being suppressed. And we've known this pretty much since Tesla, but the more we look into it, the more we realize that they know the alchemical history of the world and its truth. And this is why I'm so interested in Jordan's work, because there's another society, a society living parallel along with us, who knows all this stuff and is hiding it all from us.
And doing a very good job of it. Just a couple quick questions. Maybe Jordan can respond as well. Of course, what you're talking about reflects directly on the work in a larger sense, in a universal or galactic sense, of Dave Talbot and Wal Thornhill, the Electric
Absolutely.
Universe.
Yes.
And they are coming apparently more and more to be, at least in a cursory sense, acknowledged by a certain area of physics and astronomy as having some merit and some certainly intriguing ideas that they put forth, which is, I think, very true. What is it about hard science and physics that makes it so absolutely sure that it understands everything, that Einstein was irrevocably right, that physics as we know it now at the highest levels really have it all figured out? What is it about that, Jay, that's wrong, in your view?
Well, it's just that science is really, actually, in a lot of ways, pretty hilarious. So you can get an archaeologist in a room, and he can say, oh, okay, so where did man begin? And they say, well, man began in Africa. And then you say, why do you say that? And they say, because we've done these extensive digs in Africa, we found the bones, going back to Australopithecus. And so mankind, you know, started in Africa 4 million years ago. And you say, have you ever done these extensive digs in the United States or South America or China or Australia?
And the answer is?
Why not? Because man began in Africa. So you have this circular reasoning that goes all through the scholarly work of these guys, until by the time you come out the other end, you're either really, really confused or you just give up. And I'm afraid that's where a lot of people are these days, and I refuse to do that. I wanted to know what was going on without any spin, and so I had to go back into ancient texts to look to find things before the spin doctors got there. Mm-hmm. And that's all I'm interested in. I'm only interested in texts that haven't been spun. Alchemical texts, Nag Hammadi, the Pistis Sophia, you know, if it's been spun by people like the Bible, I really don't put much into it.
No, you shouldn't. Jordan?
Yeah, I was going to say one of the main reasons why this situation exists that Jay was talking about is because that science is actually today a religion.
Yes.
While religion should be a science. I mean, the whole spiritual aspect of man's life should be scientifically looked at, and it's not being scientifically looked at. It's being marginalized. But I think there's a real science here about how man is affected by the universe, the spiritual aspects of man's life. But again, science itself, unfortunately, today is just a religion. It's a way to make a paycheck, to get your government grant. You go along to get along, whatever the boss says. So it's not really a science anymore. There's a few real scientists who are happily, we have access to, like one that comes to my mind is, what's his name? When you mentioned the Cronje group, that is a very interesting group of people, that those scientists are really on to something. And,
they are.
Paul LaViolette was one.
Paul LaViolette, he's incredible, yes.
Yeah. I love listening to him. I met him, had nice long chats with him. But, you know, the bottom line is science is a religion now. It's very unscientific.
It's a cult of elitism that has few equals on the planet.
Yep, you're right.
If you look at it, it also excommunicates you. Paul LaViolette was excommunicated from the patent office for letting certain inventions come through that weren't allowed. So it's a religion that excommunicates you and kicks you out of it if you don't, you know, go along with it.
Yeah, I like what Dick Gregory said. He said that we like to talk about how we have freedom of speech. And he said, go out and try it.
Yeah.
Now, try it.
All
try
true.
Going out there and talking about anything that's true. Just go try it and see if you have freedom of speech. And if you're going against the grain of what's accepted, people are not going to be able to handle it. It's called cognitive dissonance.
A couple hundred years ago, they'd tie you to a stake and barbecue you.
That's it.
For
that's what they've done in the Middle Ages.
Hold on. Back in just a minute with Jordan Maxwell and Jay Widener. Okay, back with Jordan Maxwell and Jay Widener as we roll to the end of the year. Okay, gentlemen, what's next?
Well,
so there's a lot to talk about. Let me go back to this issue of evil, because I think evil has always been on the planet, but evil has ascended to abject control of the planet in one way or another. And I think that is part and parcel of a problem that may not be solvable. I don't know that there's any way to rehabilitate a planet that has fallen so deeply and darkly into the, as Jordan puts them, hidden minds behind the world control system. And this world control system is not just financial. It's not just geographical. It's a world control system that literally has the tools and the will to kill anyone, anywhere, at any time. That's not the kind of control the sentient custodial species of this planet is supposed to be living under.
Yeah, it's. I tend to agree with you, and I've been looking at this for a long time, and Jay and I have talked about this too. I don't think that it's going to be possible to rehabilitate the planet, because trying to educate people today to what's going on.
How can you? How can we, Jordan? We don't have access to the masses.
No. And it's like trying to empty the Pacific with a teacup.
About
right. Because the masses of the people are, you know, they've been reproducing themselves out there, you know, and the parents have no idea in the world what's going on. They're not educated. They're not very spiritually grounded. And so they have children, they bring up their children having no idea in the world how to parent a child, how to take care of and educate a young mind. And so those young people grow up, they become parents, and they're even more ignorant than their parents were, if that's possible. And then they have children, and their children grow up with even less supervision and less knowledge and wisdom and understanding. And eventually the entire system, and of course the system is promoted by the people who run the system, because they don't want the people being highly educated. I think old man Rockefeller made that clear many years ago when he said, we've got what he said, and I have the quote right in front of me, but basically old man Rockefeller said, we have too many doctors and lawyers and professionals on this planet. We don't need any more. My God, we got too many. What we need is the working class who will build our companies and build our nations and build our roads and do all the dirty work that we need done. We don't need bright and intelligent people. Hell, who needs them? I mean, what we need is a lot of people who are moldable, who we can direct to do our dirty work for us, fight our wars for us. So I think that this is the situation now is far, far mm-hmm. too far gone. People have allowed themselves to be molded into this mass of unthinking minds that our masters
like...
have, you know. So I don't think there's any...
No.
I don't think there ever was any real hope for the masses of the people. I think that even if you go back to the earliest spiritual writings in the ancient world, it was always understood that it's the individual that needs to step out above
uh-huh.
all of this stuff and communicate with the divine spirit. You know.
Well, and thereby lifting the common denominator even higher each time. That's the idea.
Yeah.
The baseline. Pull that baseline up, up, up. Now they're pushing it down, 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 and they want everyone to be like Kleenex tissues in a box.
That's
totally
exactly
expendable.
Right. That's exactly right. And that's unfortunately, most people do not mind, you know, lending themselves to that thinking. Most people will go along to get along, never questioning.
Well,
and
they've got their...
The problem is, even children, when they do begin to question...
Yeah,
and I know a lot of young children do question where things are going and why they are the way they are. The parents have no answers whatsoever. The parents cannot help their children because they don't know.
what kind of guidance and what kind of leadership example is that for a child?
Oh,
and
I know.
My mom and dad are dumb as a brick, and
right.
So where's the inspiration?
I told you about my situation when I was in the Catholic Church, when I was confirmed. The confirmation, the nuns told us in school, we were like 8, 9 years old, and the nuns said, tomorrow night at the confirmation service, after the service is over, the bishop might possibly ask you children if you have any questions about your religion. Of course, if that happens, you make sure you do not ask any questions of anyone. You have no questions. So that night, after the service was over, sure enough, the bishop did ask the children if they had any questions, and I stood up and raised my hand. I said, my father worked with torches, like a welder. I said, could I take a torch and burn an angel if there was an angel standing next to me? And the bishop, looked at me like I was like I was crazy. He said, well, I don't understand. I said, well, it's very simple. If I had a torch in my hand and there's an angel next to me, could I hurt him? Could I burn him? And he said, well, of course not. I said, why not? And he said, well, because fire is a natural phenomenon. You've got to have wood or paper or something to burn. You can't burn an angel. And I said, why can't you burn an angel? He said, well, because an angel's a spirit. You can't burn a spirit. And I said, well, then why am I worried about going to heaven where my spirit will burn forever if you can't burn a spirit? And, of course, the priest, I remember this priest pointed at me and said, sit down and shut up. And at 9 years old, I already figured out something is wrong here. They're just telling us some stories, and none of it makes any sense to me.
You figured out the con very early.
Very early.
All right.
So,
hold on, Jordan. We have to pause. Two esteemed colleagues with us tonight, Jordan Maxwell and Jay Widener, and we'll be right back with more after this. Okay, and we're welcoming Jay Widener and Jordan Maxwell back. There is a lot of chatter out there of people trying, either ignorantly or intentionally, to shift the focus off the center, the seat of power, the seat of darkness on the planet. Oh, it's not the Rothschilds, it's the Freemasons. Oh, it's the secret societies, and they name off half a dozen of them. Oh, it's a combination thereof. No, friends, we can trace it back to a single power source at the very tip-top of the pyramid, and that is the Rothschild family in the city of London. At the moment, more than at least 90% of the world's wealth, right? In a world of almost 7 billion people is controlled by less than, they say, 10,000 individuals. That's it, 10,000 people control over 90% of the world's wealth, mostly from a couple of dozen families, all of whom can trace their blue blood lineage, or shall we say blue bloody lineage, back hundreds and hundreds of years. At the head of the line is the Rothschild family, which controls all the others, one way or the other. It has been estimated that the aggregate Rothschild wealth is at a minimum of 5,000 times greater than the annual gross national product of these formerly United States. Although it's very difficult to calculate that, of course, because the Rothschild octopus and its loyal lieutenants of the Rockefeller family literally own the U.S. money supply through the Federal Reserve and all the major banks of the Western world. Henry Kissinger, pretty much the chief lieutenant, main gopher of David Rockefeller, who is the American, we could call him a commissar of the Rothschild Empire, which runs just about everything. There are no real enemies for these people, only those that are created by them. They're straw men. They're Hitlers. Hitler for a day, Hitler for a week. And they create the chaotic conditions that we see around us and the death to both cull the herd and profit from the sales of weapons to both sides, which they did in the last century to great effect. It has been that way throughout the 20th century and doubtless long before that. So when we talk about there's really no hope, there really isn't. I'm telling you right now, and I've said it for many, many years, these people will take the whole thing down rather than give up their position of life and death over not only each and every one of us, but the planet that we live upon. That may sound harsh, but I believe it to be true. Jay?
Well, of course, I can't argue with any of that. I know it's all true. But I would posit a slightly different point of view, in just because I'm feeling seasonal. And
is that like having your period or something?
No, I hope not anyway. After some of my girlfriends and wives periods, I would never want to go through anything like that. But I think also in a more metaphysical point of view is going on is that what we have in the literature is, of course, this whole story of the yugas, where time seems to shift as we go forward, and it gets heavier and tighter as it spirals downward. And I think that this all has to do with this anti-gravity point of view, and it actually explains a lot of what's going on in the world today. Because what's going on, according to the ancient lore, we're living in the Kali Yuga, which is the last age of these four ages when everything becomes extremely heavy and dense. And I think what this is it's sort of like a war between a gravity charge and a levity charge. And as the ages wear on, the gravity charge wins the war until the very last moment, when the levity charge comes back in to rebalance the system. Mm-hmm. And we are at the end of the Kali Yuga, and the gravity charge of the electric universe is in full swing and is dragging everything down into the ground. And it does look inevitable, and it probably is inevitable, but there is this levity charge, which is what is at the work of alchemy, which pulls things up and makes things lighter. And supposedly, according to the ancient literature, you know, at the end of time, when everything is at its heaviest, is when the levity charge comes back and draws everything back into a lighter world. And that isn't all that hard to imagine, if you can imagine everyone just suddenly deciding that they're not going to deal with the money system anymore, that they're not going to deal with the economic system, the food system, the culture, if you want to call it that, system. And my fondest hope is that, you know, the smarter ones among us will begin rising up and saying, we can't beat them head on, but we can ignore them. we can just tell them to go away and eventually defeat them.
All true, but that requires tremendous organization. It requires enlightenment. It requires leadership. It requires an ability to communicate en masse. It requires all kinds of things that are very well guarded and kept away from us.
Well, I've been reading about the peasants' revolt of the 1300s, where in England, suddenly out of the blue, I'm sure Jordan knows this very well, suddenly out of the blue, thousands and thousands of men in England rose up on one night and began streaming towards London, you know, burning and pillaging every single elite person's house, letting everyone out of the prisons, freeing the food out of the storage bins of the nobles. And they almost won, and they did eventually get, you know, King John and the right to people began then, and this was a highly organized attack, but we don't really know who did it. And I think that, you know, I'm not advocating violence, but I think there's ways, you know, in ways that are actually very effective. One of the ways I like is the one that Max Kaiser is promoting, which is that we basically just buy all the silver up until it's all gone, and then we have a de facto monetary system based on metals again, which would certainly go a long way in solving a lot of our problems.
But the issue with that, and I want to hear from Jordan on this, is it's something that is addressable by the powers and the controllers. If that began to happen, they would find a way to stop it. That's my view. I just don't think they're going to be playing by the rules and letting, say, everybody here decide to buy a dollar's worth or $10 worth. I don't think they're going to let that happen. I'm not sure what would... They'd create a war. They'd light up a suitcase nuke, declare a national emergency. Something. I think that they would stop it. And I hope I'm wrong, but it's difficult to say. Back with Jordan Maxwell, him to weigh on in this conversation in just a couple of minutes. Glad you're along tonight, as again we move right toward the end of the year. Okay, we're back with Jay and Jordan Maxwell. All right, Jordan, let's hear what you have to say about all this.
Oh, I don't know where to start, but I think that...
do you think the people can turn it around? I mean, that's a...
Say it again?
Can the people turn it around, or will they be thwarted? Jay was suggesting that if everyone bought silver, it could crash at least an important part of the pyramid. I don't think so. I don't think that they would allow that to happen. If it looked as if the people were rising up to buy silver, to cause a problem or any kind of a problem, they would ignite a war, start a false flag operation, which would bring this whole thing to a grinding halt real quick. I do not believe they're going to give it up under any circumstances that I can imagine, and I may be wrong.
Well, I don't think power has ever given up. And like Martin Luther King says, the oppressor has never, ever, in the history of the world, given up anything. I mean, it's for the oppressed to rise up and take back what was there. So I think King was right on that point, that the oppressors never give up anything. But I think it has to do the bottom line.
I mean, if we let me say one other thing, please.
Yeah.
If we went through a, quote, legal proper channel, like Jay is wisely suggesting, and began to exercise our right, if we still have it, to purchase silver, and it looked as if we were going to purchase enough silver to somehow compromise or damage the ruling elite, I say they would stop it.
Well, I'm sure they would. Anything that's going to in any way challenge their supremacy, they're going to do something about.
That's obviously not to say I wouldn't like to see it happen. But.
Well, I know, but I don't, I understand the concept. I just don't think the American people and the people in the world, generally speaking, have the wherewithal to deal with this kind of subject. I don't think they're smart enough to do it. I don't think they really don't care. Most people don't even care about the subject. As long as their belly is full and basketball's coming on, what's the problem? So, but anyway, there's a book out called, which I find to be absolutely a priceless piece by James Billington called Fire in the Minds of Men, in which he talked about so much of what's going on in the world and the people behind the scenes, the guys who are really pulling the strings ultimately. And that's a very important book you need to know about. It's called Fire in the Minds of Men by James Billington. Incidentally, James Billington is today the chief librarian for the Library of Congress. So he's very much an establishment boy.
Oh, yeah.
But that book is just filled with fascinating stuff about how the world is really run behind the scenes. It's a very academically smart book, and I suggest everybody needs to know about it. Which gets us into what Hollywood, which is another subject that Jay and I are very interested in. Maybe you could talk a little bit about the Hollywood connection.
Let's talk about Hollywood.
Yeah.
Sing a few bars, Jay.
Let's see. How about this? Back in the late 70s and early 80s, when I was unfortunately writing screenplays in Hollywood, I met this really cute girl that I was really attracted to, and she was an actress. And she told me that she was going to work her way to the top no matter what it took. Now, I would see her about once every 6 weeks or so. We'd talk, have coffee or whatever. And then after a while, I didn't see her. I knew she was working her way to the top, and I didn't see her for a long time. And then I saw her about a year, it took about a year, and then I saw her again. And so we went out for tea, and I said, well, so what have you been up to? And she said that she was hanging out with the heads of the studios. And I said, oh, really? And she said, yeah, and I'm leaving. I'm going back to the Midwest where I came from. And I said, well, why? And she said, well, I was at a party in Beverly Hills, and I heard that there was another party going on downstairs, and I wanted to go to that party, but I guess I wasn't invited. So I worked my way down into that party, and I got down into that party, and you know what they were doing? And I thought that they were probably doing drugs or something. And I said, well, what, cocaine or something? And she said, no, they were actually sacrificing a human being. And I said, really? And I've been hearing these stories ever since I arrived in the fabled town of Hollywood, but I never believed any of them. I didn't even believe in conspiracies at the time. Huh. And I never saw her again. And she was so frightened. And so...
I had some friends who were house cleaners in Montecito.
Yep.
Big mansions, and one of them told me that they were one, I won't mention the name, as a major film figure. And in his living room, they were cleaning, and there was a big throw rug, and they rolled the throw rug out, take it outside to vacuum it or something. They apparently weren't supposed to, but under the throw rug was an enormous, ornately inlaid pentagram in the tiled floor.
Oh, yeah. Well, you get all that up there in Hollywood, and what you're really dealing with is these magicians. Great book, by the way, if you ever want to read a great book on Hollywood, it's called Flicker by Theodore Roszak, which absolutely dead, on-the-money book about Hollywood and what goes on there.
I had that a long time ago. Excellent, excellent book. Flicker.
Yes, it is. Well, Jordan, you got anything to say?
Yeah, that's kind of scary because I have a friend that works for the studios. He drives the big trucks for the equipment, the heavy equipment for the studios. And he took me out a couple of times on weekends, on Saturday mornings early, and we'd go out because he wanted to show me all of the strange places where movies have been made and tell me about all the background about these occult movies and who's doing them and where they were filmed. And we ended up up on Mulholland Drive where Mulholland crosses the Coldwater Canyon, and we drove up. We drove up this dirt road, and this is right here in the Hollywood Hills, off of Mulholland. And he was telling me about this human sacrifice that's going on up here. And we walked about maybe a block up into the hills, and there was a altar of brick, all laid out into an altar, and we could see that there was blood on the altar. And he was telling me about how they actually have child sacrifices and human sacrifices up there. And I've been up there two or three times since. Now, of course, the city has put a fine, not to go back there at all. And so I've heard from people on the inside about these human sacrifices going on. And to my way of thinking, there's no doubt in my mind that this stuff is, in fact, happening. And today, I've even been told by people, I wouldn't use their name, but very famous people are telling me that even over in Glendale, California, in an area called Eagle Rock, on top of that big rock mountain, it's called Eagle Rock, on certain nights they have human sacrifices and all kinds of rituals going on. Where people do die, where children are taken up for human sacrifice. So I think that this kind of stuff is, in fact, going on even today. And that, in and of itself, implies something is very, very evil going on the earth when humans are dying, and then we go to watch movies made by these people. It's something to think about. It's very scary, but I'm sure it's happening.
Well, I totally agree. And when Stanley Kubrick was very young, he actually lived in L.A. for about a year filming Spartacus, and he left right after it, and he was interviewed by someone, and they said, why aren't you going to stay in L.A.? And he used a very interesting term. He said, L.A. has an extremely malignant quality. And you just have to wonder, what he was really talking about, because for sure he was up there in the ranks rubbing shoulders with these guys.
Yep.
And I think, he saw it and he got scared and he left, which is pretty much what I did when I found out about it. And I thought, it was a place where we made nice movies like It's a Wonderful Life and Disney and things, and found out, in fact, the sickest of sick people are actually making the film. I used to work for one of the more famous producers. I'm not going to mention his name, and I would give him my screenplay, and he would go through it, and he would write MV and MS all over the screenplay, and I'd say, what does MV mean? He goes, more violence. I'd say, well, what does MS mean? More sex. And that was it. That was the only comments I would get. And I'm actually being very nice. It wasn't those words. It was other words, which you can well imagine what they were.
So the plot was secondary to the
Absolutely.
Sex and violence. Just the
it
plot was just
a
simple clothesline to hang the rest of the material on.
To subjugate people to the most profane views of humanity. That was what I ended up realizing, and I still realize it, and why I refuse to even cooperate with them, even though today they're coming to me asking me if I want to be involved with projects with them, and I refuse because I know it will always deteriorate down to the lowest common denominator before the end game, before the piece is finished. And I know rap stars who've told me that they will write nice songs, and by the time it's produced by these evil people, the song has been reduced to complete nightmare insanity. And so this isn't just one thing. It permeates the entire culture. And, but there's interesting things going on. Nobody's going to movies anymore. Nobody's watching TV anymore. So where's this going to end up? I mean,
When you say nobody, that's
very
nobody.
Few.
That's nobody who's thinking, but I'm afraid most of the cattle aren't. If you look at the box office totals, there's still a lot of money they're pulling in.
Well, there is.
You
not
make
as
a
much
good
as
point.
There used to be,
yeah,
but,
you make a good point, but remember, 87% of the traitors in Congress were returned to Congress by the electorate. Now, I know the vote scam issue is huge, but still, They voted, and many of them voted for these people because they don't know any better. They just think the left-right paradigm is real, and they keep playing the game. It's like keep pulling the crank on the slot machine over and over. Each time you pull it, you go further and further into debt. This is the way it is. All right, hang on, gang. We have to pause. We'll come right back. Hour two in just a few minutes with Jay and Jordan.